Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to The Rundown. I'm your host, Shwinipu, today, and I'm joined by Jeff, who you can follow on Twitter, or sorry, the artist formerly known as Twitter, now known as X, at FrankBarrett119. He's also the co-founder of The Hot Hand Theory. Jeff, how are you doing on this fucking Thursday night? How are you doing?
I'm terrific. The Knicks got a win. Hopefully we escaped the scariest of all scary possibilities with OG, but we will see. I'm still a little bit nervous. I only have so much information. I'm not gonna criticize anybody. Obviously the people there had more information than me, but with how he was grimacing anytime there was any contact on his arm in the game situation, I don't see how it was reasonable for him to play the amount he did in the second half, but I guess we'll see. Maybe he'll just be fine and it was just a stinger.
Yeah, I have some thoughts on that and we'll talk about it. But before we get started, I do have to make a few announcements. I have to introduce our wonderful sponsors. We've got a great new sponsor. I love betting my friends and betting them on anything sports games. Who's fast? That's what Cut allows me to do. The Cut app is a peer-to-peer social betting platform that's legal in 40 plus states. Cut has customizable odds, tracking capabilities, and an entire social network with group chats, user profiles, and rewards. All payments, no need for Venmo. What can we bet on? Well, we could bet on a few things. If you bet on the Knicks to cover the spread today, well, guess what? You covered just by the hair of your chinny chin chin. A garbage time 3-point attempt by Ashton Hagens missed, ensuring the Knicks once again covered the spread, the masters of doing so in the OG and Anobi era. So use our promo code BELIEVENICKS, BLEAV, Knicks for a 10% welcome deposit bonus. Don't forget that promo code again. That's BELIEVENICKS, BLEAV, Knicks. Put your money where your mouth is. And BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year with up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends. You can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting, contests, and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime on your desktop or your mobile devices. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Look, I totally understand why people were freaking out about OG Anunoby. I'm not a doctor. Jeff, are you a doctor?
I'm not. Sorry, I'm not a doctor.
Okay, that's interesting to hear. I'm pretty confident that most of the people that were commenting on OG Anunoby's obvious discomfort were also not doctors. And I assume that if he was playing through his discomfort, that the people in charge of dealing with his return from elbow surgery would have said something. But they didn't. They let him play through it. And I'm okay with that because I'm not a fucking doctor. I don't have access to some medical information. I don't know what the recovery is. I don't know what the fuck any of this shit is. Not, I bet 99% of people coming on don't either. And you know what? I got to say this too. Knicks fans, fucking week ago, everybody's bitching about, oh, he's full tilt in practice. He's going 5-on-5. Get him back in the game. We need it. We're running these guys into the ground. We look at Josh Hart. Look, he's a warrior. He's playing through all this stuff. Brunson, DiVincenzo. We're going to kill these guys. Like, figure it out. Do you want guys to play through injury or do you not? Figure it out and then shut the fuck up. Because I'm so sick and tired of people not, like, what do you want? Do you? And also, I just got to say this. If you have an issue with how the Knicks are handling his medical stuff, fine. I can't tell you what to feel about that. Stop directing your anger about this at Tom Thibodeau. He is not the one making this fucking call, okay? That is the medical staff. If the medical staff is telling him OG and Obi is good to go, guess what? He's going to fucking play him, just like any fucking coach is going to fucking play the guy if he's healthy. Because he also is aware, yes, one, he needs to get him back up to speed for the stretch run and hopefully the playoffs, obviously. He needs to reestablish, he has to get game conditioning, he has to reestablish chemistry with his teammates, blah, 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 blah. Okay? Like, we need to stop freaking out about this stuff because, one, we can't really control it, and two, there's an entire staff of medical professionals employed to handle this stuff on behalf of the New York Knicks. Okay? So, I'm really not interested in discussing. We will see what happens with OG Anunoby. Either way, I think people putting that on Tom Thibodeau is kind of a joke. I'm sorry. Like, I know that I'm like, you know, the big, you know, shit on Tom Thibodeau guy. But I don't think this is a case where you can do that. You know, I just don't. And it's just really, really annoying that this is constantly like a topic of conversation because I don't really understand what any of us can do about it. You know, I don't think there's anything for us to do about it. So I don't know. That's just like my little rant about this because I think you're actually coming at it from the right place where it's like, hey, I would have preferred if you didn't play, but I don't fucking know. So we'll just see what happens and we'll go from there. That's where I'm at with it. You know, none of us actually knows. None of us is paid to make those decisions. I think it's okay if we just trust the medical staff. And in their favor is, it's very obvious Isaiah Hartenstein has been on some type of minutes limit since he's returned. We know Jalen Brunson has not, I mean, I don't know. They keep wording it in the weirdest way possible. He's basically on some kind of like, if we cannot play him a lot, we won't play him a lot. But if we do need to play him a lot, we can, whatever you want to call that, a minutes recommendation. I think they deserve the benefit of the doubt. We already know that OG was practicing for a week or 2 weeks before he even got cleared to play, right? He didn't play that first Philly game. And I think you could almost guarantee that if he played that game, the Knicks win it. I don't even think that's a question. And they didn't play him in that. They pissed away a game as a result. I'm okay. I'm sorry. I'm just okay trusting them on this and going from there. Also, I wanted to pull this comment up. This is from Jason Lustbader. Spread was -12.5 to close, so not sure. If you bet Knicks 12.5, you lost, I would know. Yes, if you did bet them at the very end, sure. But the line opened at 10.5 yesterday. Then it moved all the way to 11.5, moved down to 10 at some point today, early in the morning today. Then it moved back up to 11.5. And then I think it moved to 12, and then initially, and then it got bet up to 12.5. After the news was out that Simons was also missing this game. So I'm sorry that you caught it at the end and you got kind of screwed there by, honestly, Jalen Brunson, one of the weirdest 45-point games I think you'll ever see. And honestly,
you mean like worst, right?
it was like some good shot making mixed in with like pretty consistently, I thought, selfish decision making. I did not think he had a very good floor game. There were a shit ton of possessions where he just dribbled the ball, and then he like didn't create anything, then had to throw it out to somebody, threw basically a fucking grenade to somebody with 7 seconds left on the shot clock, and it's like, all right, go create. And it was just, I did not care for his game today. I thought it was really, you know, you talked about this on your pod with XJ, but he had what, 20, and I don't even know how many assists he had against Philly, but like, he just played the game that was in front of him. He made quick reads. He basically read what the defense was giving him, trusted his teammates. And I get it. Guys were not hitting threes tonight. But, like, I think that he was – I thought even from the start of the game, he just didn't really let anybody else get into a rhythm. It was a very weird performance from him. And whatever. The Knicks got the win. He got 45 points, 14 of 30 from the field. But definitely not a game that I think – when you're remembering this Jalen Brunson season, I don't think this game is going to register as one of his great performances of the season, even if it is one of his highest scoring ones.
Yeah, it was like the Knicks completely dominated the game from the second quarter on. They were up double digits for most of it. They lost the 3-point battle. So like they could have won by more if there was just like average shooting distribution. And I didn't feel like Brunson was a huge part of the – like, I thought he was the guy that was controlling most possessions. But I thought all the special things that were going into dominating the game, the unique things, the things that fewer people could have replicated were done by, like, Josh Hart and, honestly, OG Anunoby again before the injury started to – like, Josh Hart.
And Deuce in the first half.
And Deuce in the first half. Hardenstein in his spare minutes is really good on both ends. Like the Knicks actually just, aside from the Pistons players, kind of got a complete all-around performance. You know, DiVincenzo was kind of everywhere. I thought of you again, Chwin, because it's been a long time since we've talked about his layup missing. It's been months. I had forgotten about it.
Yeah, I could not believe that miss. That's like the easiest, like it wasn't even contested. He just fucking, and that was a dime from Deuce. That was like, I mean, it was a phenomenal pass. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You played quarterback in high school. I see it. But also, like,
shout out. I mean, I don't know. I haven't been on every post game, but holy shit, a bunch of people are tuned in to listen to us. So we gotta step up our game here, Schwinn. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, the Knicks went 6 of 29 from three tonight. Just to kind of highlight these. I think somebody mentioned it in here, so I want to pull this comment up. This is from JL. He missed a shit ton of good looks from three, to be fair. Yeah, Brunson definitely did. But Brunson shot 2 of 10 from three. DiVincenzo 2 of 8. Anunoby 1 of 4. Josh Hart 0 for 2. Bogdanović 0 for 2. McBride 0 for 1. Alec Burks, I wish he went 0 for 2, but he went 1 for 2. I want to say this. Bogdanović did not play well tonight, but I'm watching him and I'm like, okay, I thought he got left with three of his shots were just these awful like grenade situations where it was like, all right, you get the ball with like 7 seconds left, top of the key, nothing has happened on this possession, go get us a bucket. I think that's a tough place to put him in. And just generally speaking, I'm like, all right, I can like see him trying to play within like a totally different team concept than whatever's going on in Detroit. I can like see him trying to like the 3-pointer he missed in the fourth quarter. That was a great possession. I mean, he played it off well. He got an open corner three off a 2-man game with Hartenstein. It was a really nice possession. I wish he had cashed it in. He missed it, whatever. But I think you're seeing less of like the, you know, Pistons, like, I'm the best guy in this team type. I'm just going to go those type of possessions from him. I think you're seeing less of that, especially in these two games since Anunoby came back. Did not have a good game, though. And we can't just keep sitting here and be like, well, I liked some of his decisions. He's going to have to make more shots. We know that, okay? That's 100% accurate.
Yeah,
Alec Burks is playing like a fucking asshole. Like, he played – that was one of the most ridiculous 4-minute stretches of play I think you'll ever watch from a guy. Like, I have no idea what that was. He hit two of his first three shots, one of which was the only putback he will have probably all season and should have never happened. It was also a terrible shot that he initially took. The 3-pointer he took, fine. Took a pull-up three that he had room on, have no problem with it. He just kept fucking shooting every time he touched the ball after that. And I think Tibbs, like, honestly, if I'm Tibbs, I'm ready to just throw Shake Milton in there ahead of Burks and see what happens, because I can't watch this shit anymore. And maybe he needs a fucking wake up call that, hey, dude, this is not 2021-22 anymore. Like, we actually have a good team. We actually have expectations. We are trying to do something here beyond let you cook and pick and rolls. I don't know what the hell that was. That was embarrassing, though. And I had zero issue with Tibbs going to an eight-man rotation in the second half. In fact, I would have. I think I said this on the pod that I discussed with that we dropped or we're going to drop tomorrow with Prez. But like, I'm almost at the point where like, if OG's good to go, I'm almost okay with just going with an eight-man rotation until Randall gets back. Or I'm at a point where I'm ready to. I'll throw Sims back in there before I watch Brooks again. I don't know what the fuck's going on with him. He's been so selfish and just quite frankly playing like an absolute asshole since he's been traded to New York. And I don't know what the fuck is going on with him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree about Sims, but I'm very on board with the eight-man rotation idea. And I think it's totally reasonable, especially with Tibbs' willingness to play Deuce off of Brunson, as he's shown, you know, the last two games. You could make the argument that that could open his mind to other allowing other players to have multiple roles. You know, obviously he knows how versatile Josh Hart and OG Anunoby are. He played Dante DiVincenzo at small forward a little bit tonight. Like, I know he wasn't actually a small forward, but they went with the three guard lineup a little bit. Pulling Burks from the rotation for the next week, 2 weeks, however long it takes Randall to return.
It could be three fucking years and I'll be fine with that. By the way, Tom, this is from Fred Katz. Tom Thibodeau said no Burks in the second half. Was a basketball decision, no injury. Yeah. Yep. Great basketball decision. One of the best Tom Thibodeau has ever made, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. No, that's, and it was the second straight game he did it. I don't know why they're implying there that it didn't happen against the Sixers. Yeah, like you said, but it did.
You know what is, the game was such a blowout. I think people like kind of tuned out.
Yeah. But also Burks and Burks re-entered. So like he didn't actually sit out the entire second half, but he came in for garbage time. He didn't actually play.
He got the Sims. He got the Sims charity minutes.
Yeah.
By the way, I just want to read this before you keep going. Jordan Budd posted this. This is from Fred Katz. Also, Tom Thibodeau said the Knicks expected OG Anunoby, who was holding a surgically repaired elbow and grimacing throughout the game, to have moments like he did tonight. Stuff like that is going to happen, he said. Added, we were expecting there to be bumps and bruises like that.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get a chance to respond to what you said. I think we're mostly on the same page in so far as like having the humility to be cognizant that we're not doctors. We don't have near all the information. I would never attack the coach for making the decision he did, because you'd like to assume that he made the decision with the all clear from the doctors. I do think it would be a bad look aesthetically if like OG misses Saturday's game. Like I assume you agree with that, right? Like if he misses Saturday's game because he wakes up tomorrow and oh shit, the pain is worse than we thought it was going to be. Like, yeah, well, we saw you grimacing out there and the Knicks were up 16 against a really bad team without its four best players. You know, like there has to be some willingness of, okay, I know the doctor said he's fine to play right now. I don't know. Again, this isn't a criticism of Tibbs. I'm just saying.
I this is the thing. This is the coach he is. So at some point, like, and I just, like, there's just stuff with him at this point. I'm done. Like, in the moment, I might be upset about something, but I'm really, really done with, like the Sims 2 center stuff, right? There are people that are losing their minds about this. And I'm like, dude, you can sit here and tell me, well, we could put Boyan in for spacing, could put Burt. Like, have you watched these guys play? They've been fucking awful. So, like, yeah, I mean, look, I'm watching that Philly game just like you were. And I do think, like, yeah, look, if there's ever a time to give Boyan a shot in the fourth quarter, that was it, right? But, like, I also think that there's a big enough sample of these guys in New York that it's not insane to me if I'm Tibbs and I'm just like, you know what? I don't think they have not shown me that they're going to win me a game. So I'm just going to roll with the rotation I had pre-planned and play these two center minutes for, you know, the middle of the half and then go back to like Precious and Hartenstein or whatever, you know, you know what I mean? But like, mm-hmm. I just can't, like, so with the injury thing, like, look, I can sit here and I can fundamentally feel, yeah, well, you know, if that was me, I might have seen OG grimacing and I would have pulled him from the game and just been like, you know, we're playing the fucking Blazers. Let's figure it out. I think that's reasonable. I also am aware who Tom Thibodeau is. If a guy that he likes, that is a quality player, that who is in his rotation, is healthy and available, and the medical staff is telling him he's good to go, he's going to play the guy. That's just how he's wired. And that's how a lot, I mean, we've seen games where Brunson is clearly not 100%. We've seen DiVincenzo play through stuff where he's not 100%. Hart, Randall, obviously, right? Like, the list goes on. Hartenstein, whatever. That's also kind of like, I don't want to say the culture of the team, the identity of the team, whatever you want to, however you want to phrase it. That's kind of like how this team is wired. And I will say this. OG Anunoby missed, what, about 6 weeks? Is that right? Sounds about right. Right? 6 weeks. That time, I've seen you tweet about it. We've talked about it. But, like, he was playing Brunson, DiVincenzo, and Hart, those three very specifically, so many minutes to overcome the fact that, one, OG is out. Obviously, Randall is out, too. And that whatever bump they were hoping to get from Bojan and Burks, whether you believe it's going to happen, whether you never believed it was going to happen, whether you think that's still going to happen, it has not happened. And you have to, the East, I mean, go look at the standings of the East right now. That fucking three seed, or basically like the four seed to the, what, seven or eight seed is so tight. Like, I don't think it's unreasonable to push guys a bit. And quite frankly, if you look at other coaches in those stack of teams, they've pushed players too. I mean, you've talked about Haliburton, and the minutes have not been as extreme, but it's obvious that he was pushing to play through stuff. But whether that be because he wants an extra $40 million to qualify, if he qualifies for all NBA, I don't know. But players are going to want to play if they're any way remotely cleared to play. And Tibbs is a coach who is not going to, like, sit there and be like, oh my God, OG Anunoby's his elbow, it hurts. Like, I got to get him out of there. He probably looked at OG and was like, you good? And OG's probably like, yeah, because he's a robot. And then, and that was like the end of the, and he, I'm sure the medical staff was like, I mean, they looked at him, right? I'm sure they looked at him at halftime or whatever. And they're like, yeah, he's good. Like, I don't know. At that point, I can sit here and feel like, oh man, like if that was me, fine. But like, it's not me, it's Tibbs. That's what Tibbs is going to do. If we have a problem with that, if we have a problem with all these various Tibbs-isms, that is a decision that needs to come from the front office. But for me, like, I understand why fans still harp on a lot of this stuff. And I'm not, like, obviously there are in games and shit where I'm like, what the fuck? Put in anybody that can shoot the ball, bro. Like, I'm there too. But after a game, whatever, like, I just kind of am like, I don't know. Like, I've like made my peace, I guess, with all the weird Tibbs stuff. And like, what did Hart play the first 18 minutes of this game or something? I don't know. But like, I'm done bitching about it because I'm just like, he's just going to do it. Because he like looks at Josh Hart and Josh Hart's like, I can play every minute of every game. And Tibbs is like, great, because I'm going to play you every fucking minute of every second of every game. So let's go with that. It just is what it is. Like, I don't know. I can't bother losing. Like, I can't, for me, it's like a waste of energy at this point to complain about this stuff. Cause this is his fourth year as our coach. We kind of like know what to expect at this point.
Yeah. Everything you just said was completely reasonable and right. I just think there's a difference between you're done with it and the criticism is wrong. You're not the criticism, the raising.
It's fair. Fair. I understand it. I just get, but like, I'll put it this way. Like, I think it's fair. If you raise the criticism and you're like, hey, I really think he should have sat him, I can feel how I feel. You can feel how you feel. That's not unreasonable. Where I think it becomes unreasonable is like every fucking game you get like one of these things that happens and it's like, this is why Tom Thibodeau needs to be fired. And it's like, dude, like, really? Like, that's it? That was the final straw for you? Like, I don't know. You can go back fucking during that 2021-22 season and even, you know, through the first 20 games of last season, and I'm sitting here like, man, get fucking Tibbs out of here. Or at the end of last season, after the playoff series against Miami, quite frankly, I stand by that. I probably would have fired him then. But like, he's not been fired. And I don't think the things that, like, there are things to me that are just not fireable offenses. And I'm sorry, like, I have a hard time being like, well, the medical staff cleared this guy and they were cautious in bringing him back to game, like, you know, to make him active again. To me, like, if he's playing OG through something and the medical staff's good with it, it just, I can't get to the point, and I'm not saying you are either, by the way, but I can't get to the point where people are constantly where it's like, this is why we should fire Tibbs. It's like, I don't know, dude. Like, honestly, I'm probably not going to fire Tibbs until I just see how the playoffs unfold. And maybe at that point, I'll feel like they should fire him. But I am pretty much fine with the job he's done overall this season. Like, I think he's probably, honestly, I think this is like the best job he has done.
See, like, this is our, we've had this disconnect multiple conversations in a row. Like, I just ignore those people at this point. Like, it's completely unreasonable to expect Tibbs to be fired or think that's even a real conversation. So who cares? Like, I'm like, when we were talking about the Boyan thing against the Sixers on Sunday, I wasn't coming from this is why Tibbs's job should be in jeopardy. It was just more of like a, I thought this was a decision that was
best. I disagreed with his choice.
Right, exactly. I feel like we should get to a point, and I mean me and you, not the collective we, but we should get to a point where, like, that is a given. Neither one of us is talking like, oh, Tibbs needs to go. Like, I don't know. I just think it's so silly how every single criticism of this guy has to be qualified with, oh, like, I know he's a good coach. I know he's a smart guy. It's like, fuck, man, like, it's okay to just talk about this shit and just be like, yeah, I didn't agree with this decision tonight. We can move on. And, you know, to bring it back to the OG thing and kind of reel it in, again, we don't have all the information. So, like, what can we really say that matters? All I'm saying is that if OG misses Saturday and the injury lingers, I think it's reasonable to say that, like, overuse after there was a clear moment where he banged it up, nicked it up, even despite the trainers being like, yeah, he could probably go. And even despite, you know, in your theory, OG being like, yep, robotically, I'm good to go. There was a line where it was like, okay, this game is out of reach. This opponent isn't very good. Maybe he doesn't need to be out there. In my opinion, Tibbs probably fell short of that line. And if OG misses future games, I think that would be a poor look. No, I don't think that should cost him his job or even close to that. I'm just, you know, there's nothing else to talk about from this game. It's a fucking win against the Blazers without their four best players. Like, so that's why I'm talking about this. Like, I'm not talking about it to try to start a fire Tibbs movement. Fuck.
Yeah. Fucking Ayton had 31 points on, I felt like he didn't miss. It was ridiculous watching him. I don't think I've seen him this active on the offensive glass ever. Like, that was wild, some of the stuff he was getting. He was good, though. He was good. I will say this. I want to talk about one thing. Whatever we want to say about Brunson, and I did not think he played a very good game, despite, like, it says something about how good of a player he is that he could score 45 points on 30 shots. And my, like, feeling of his game was, I was like, you know, I would have liked to see him pass a little bit more. Like, it says something about how good he is as a player. But forgetting that, I would sacrifice half of the free throws he got today for the refs to start calling these fouls when he's bringing the ball up the floor. Like, Scoot Henderson, did he play fucking linebacker in high school? Because he looked like one out there today. He was just fucking pushing. Like, he was just ridiculous. It was crazy to see some of the stuff he was getting away with when he was defending Brunson coming up the floor. Same thing with Tumani Kamara. And it's not just it's not just tonight against these guys. This is like every game now since Brandle's gone down. You're seeing that teams are just like, he's the only guy that can create shots. We're going to wear him down. And the refs are letting them get away with it. And I understand, and I've talked about it too. Hey, Brunson plays physically, offensively. So I understand that refs maybe, you know, there's a, they kind of give his defenders a little bit more leeway than they might in other situations. That's all well and good.
And he hunts contact.
Yeah, and he
a lot.
He does, yeah. For sure. But, like, at some point, I would, like, you can't allow that. Like, you, like, what was happening, especially at the, I mean, the end of that fourth quarter was ridiculous, where it was just like, they would call fouls once guys were potentially going to shoot the ball. But, like, everything else, they were just kind of like, we'll just let it go. It's not a big deal. I don't know. I have had a really big problem with the way he's being officiated right now, not because I think he deserves more trips to the free throw line. I think he needs to get fouls called on him before he's even shooting the ball, because some of the shit teams are getting away with, you know, just when he's bringing the ball up or when he's trying to initiate sets. And, you know, it's getting absurd. Like, it really is. Like, there was one possession today where Scoot literally – shoved Hartenstein multiple times, like, literally full hands out extended, shoved him out of the way. I think it was in the third quarter. And then he's, like, bodying Brunson out at the three-point line. It's like, dude, you can't allow that. Like, I understand wanting to allow physicality. There's a difference between physicality and fouling. And that was not physicality. That was just straight up fouling, guys. You're allowed to call that. I'm sorry. That is not, oh, we want the game to be more physical. Fine, let the game be more physical. That's fine. I don't mind that at all. But blatant fouls are blatant fouls. If I fucking slap you across the arm, that's a foul. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you want the game to be physical. That's a fucking foul. Like, and I'm not, I don't even think that was like, that's not what was happening on that play. I'm just making a very blatant example. But it's like, if Brunson's dribbling with the ball, you know, with his back to the basket, you know, with 15 seconds on the shot clock, because he's trying to milk it out and just protect the ball, that doesn't mean that defenders should be allowed to grab him and push him. And that's bullshit. That's a foul. Call the foul. You're allowed to do that. You can call the foul there. And if anything, it sets the example, right? Hey, we're calling this. If you want to not call some of the and one stuff that he sells inside the arc, I would gladly sacrifice that for calling that shit outside, you know, when he's bringing the ball up and trying to initiate offense. Because that's the stuff that really, I think it pisses him off. And I can see his frustration mounting. And it's not about the free throw calls. It is about those calls that they're missing. Because teams are intentionally trying to grind him down. And, you know, he's a tough guy. He's strong as hell. But I think the league and the way he's being officiated, in particular, in that stretch starting right before the All-Star break, has just been it's gone out of control. And I've been talking about it for a while, but I think it's ridiculous.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I thought the Kamara possession that you referenced was kind of absurd, but I feel like the other way, because like Brunson just couldn't get by him. And so he just like ran into him twice and snapped his head back. Like if I was a Blazers fan, that would have pissed me off so much, because it was just like Brunson just dribbling into the body multiple times because he wasn't able to get by him. The Scoot possession you're talking about was absurd. I don't know how that wasn't a foul on Scoot Henderson.
He had multiple possessions today that were just ridiculous. Like, honestly, Scoot not fouling out of that game was a joke. It looked like he was playing, like, it genuinely looked like he was playing football today. I could not believe that, man. It was
the only thing I'll say is, I mean, we're talking about a game where the Blazers shot 16 free throws and Brunson outshot them from the free throw line. Like, that's like I see what you're saying, because it has a wear and tear on his overall offense. So like, even though it's reflected in the free throws, what you're saying is that it hurts his ability in the macro to create offense. And I get that.
And in general, like, look, I think Brunson played into it tonight too, where he was trying to milk the clock down and set his defender up. And he was like, you would tell tonight was like I need to get my scoring average, average up type of game. Like, that's just like, it's how he played it. It's fine. Whatever, it happens. Right. And he's good enough where he can do it. And he did get his scoring average up and we won. Cool. Great. Fantastic. But it, like, when you allow that, the shot clock naturally, like, you're getting into offense later in the shot clock. So there's less ball movement. There's less player movement. There's less of this stuff. Like, you know, there's less of good offense. And so, like, to me, yeah, we got more free throws than them today. Personally, I think we did deserve more free throws. But, yeah, we got more free throws than them today. And Brunson outshot them individually. You know, I get all that. I think that you would get, maybe I think they would have scored 105 either way, with or without those foul call, like without the shooting fouls, if they call the fouls I'm talking about. Because to me, those affect the entire flow of the offense. And that has ramifications aside from Brunson. Like, to his, in defense of some of his decision-making, it's possible he comes up there and he's like, oh shit, there's already like 13 seconds on the shot clock. Like, I'm not giving this to Josh Hart. I'm not giving this to Hartenstein. I have to just do this because that's what we have right now. You know, if there's Randall out there, maybe it's a little bit different, but like, he doesn't. So I can understand maybe why he played the game in a certain way also. But, you know, when you don't allow, when you're allowing that type of physicality and you're allowing a team to just really like force the Knicks to get into their sets way later than normal, even for the Knicks, like, it leads to the type of shit we saw tonight. And I don't know. It's not just this game. I've been talking about this now for multiple games on multiple pods that, and if anybody's listened to them, you've heard me say it, but like, I haven't tweeted it because I'm like, I don't know how to tweet this in a way that makes sense. And I don't want fans of other teams to be like, oh, how could you complain about it? Brunson shot 16 free throws the other night. And it's like, dude, that's not what I'm fucking talking about. Like, shut up. Like, it's not my point. Cause it's not my point. I don't think that he's not getting enough free throws. Like I said, I wish he'd got less free throws. I'd be happy if he got less free throws. But like, it's just not on the cards right now. So if this is how they're going to let defenses play him, then I think we should be ready for more of, you know, the type of, and I think he's really taken the foul hunting stuff that you're talking about to another level, in part because he's, it's like a destructive cycle, right? Where he's like, well, I'm not getting this call, so I'm going to keep trying to get that call. And then, like, you know, refs eventually wear down, right? They're going to give you some calls here and there. He's really skilled at, like, that rip through move he has when he's driving is fucking awesome. He's fantastic at it. It's just a really annoying cycle.
But also something to remember, Schwinn, is we're an extremely physical team defensively. So, like, it's more jarring to Knicks fans, one, because we correctly have a bias towards Brunson, but also two, because without Randall, he carries such a high usage. So like, per game, nobody is taking more hits or having more like heavy contact that goes uncalled than Brunson. So it feels like relatively he's getting a bad whistle. But when the other team, you know, has a more egalitarian offense and they're having multiple guys have, you know, collectively have as many of those calls, it doesn't stand, or those no calls, it doesn't stand out as much, you know. And I'm not trying to rain on your parade, or, you know, I'm sure some Knicks fans who are tuning in are like, why the fuck is he being rational? Let's just bitch about the refs. I just, you know, I'm just trying to keep it a little bit level-headed here. And I do think that the Knicks are a really good, tough defensive team. That's what Thibodeau has instilled in this team. And I do think that the Knicks, I don't want to say get away with fouls, but the stuff that we're saying, like, oh, like, how could they not call that on Brunson? There's probably times where we don't even notice it because we're just like, oh yeah, good defense, Knicks, you know, like, because we're, that's just how a biased eye works.
Yeah. I can't agree with it. I just can't. I'm sorry. Like, I watch all these games and I'm like, I don't think the Knicks are getting a bad whistle. I'm not even like, I'm not really of the opinion that like, oh my God, the Knicks are getting shit whistle and the league is against them. But like, I think this stretch with Brunson has gone completely out of hand. And I felt this way for a while. Like, that fucking Houston game was a joke. We all knew at the time.
Yeah.
I thought the Orlando game after that was a joke too, which whatever. You know, you can go on and on. I can go through the game logs and oh, this one, that one, whatever. But like, it's just getting to it. Like, even today, he hit a fucking three in the fourth quarter, finally. And he clearly had somebody in his landing area. If you're not going to fucking call that, then what the fuck is the point of that rule? But if it was James Harden, they probably would have fucking called a flagrant and would have rewarded him with fucking two more free throws in the ball. Like, the landing stuff with him has been a joke all year. Going back to the first game of the season,
he's the only person who's gotten an offensive flagrant for flopping. Like, that literally the entire league, he's gotten two of them.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to watch. Somebody who's not a Knicks fan is listening to this, which I don't know why you're listening to a Knicks Blazers post game if you're not a Knicks fan. but like,
kudos to that person, though.
Yeah, I it's just brutal for me.
One thing I do want to say, because, you know, I'm just, again, all about the macro and controlling what you can control. I thought you brought up a really interesting point about how the defenders, and mainly the bigger defenders riding Brunson up the court, has forced him to isolate later in the shot clock because the possessions start later. And when you look at the Knicks pace data, they're down to last in the NBA in pace. And I'm curious if you are of the opinion, partially due to the contact and the physicality that opponents are getting away with against Brunson, if you think that the Knicks should make an asserted effort to play faster and just get into their sets quicker because of this stuff.
I mean, I think, like, would I like to see them play faster? Yes, I would have liked to see them play faster for the entire time Tibbs has been the coach. I think it's safe to say at this point they're just not going to. Yeah. And Tibbs can sit there as much as he wants and be like, oh, I'd like us to push pace and get out in the in transition. But, like, he only likes it in, like, extremely obvious situations or if, like, Josh Hart does it. Like, that's basically it. Like, I don't think he really wants us to do it. So it's just like, would I like to see them push the pace more? Yeah. Do I think it might help a little bit? Sure. But that's not really what they're ever going to be. And like, you know, if you want to watch a team and watch how certain players can benefit from increased pace versus playing in the more, you know, like the Knicks are playing at a pace that is basically different from like the rest of the league. It just is. But you know, look at RJ Barrett. He clearly was not a good half court player against set defenses and struggled with a lot of that stuff. Go watch him in Toronto. Like, he's playing much more efficiently. They run a lot more. And I'm not, by the way, condolences to RJ Barrett and his family, obviously, with the passing of his brother, which is tragic. This is not about the trade and, oh my God, how could we never gave him the keys and all. No, it's not about that. Like, it's just, you see where sometimes that can benefit players, but Tibbs, this is what Tibbs wants. I think the roster has been constructed in a way to accommodate that preference of his. Their best players, I think, are better in Brunson. I think is actually pretty good either way. Like, I think he can play fast. I think he obviously can play in the half court. Like, that's not a problem for him.
Yeah.
I know Randall, like, he loves to do the coast-to-coast, you know, thing, but, like, I don't love when Randall does that. It's definitely an adventure quite often, but I don't think that's really where he's most efficient. And I, you know, before, it's unfortunate he got injured because I thought his play, like, the 2 months leading in, like, prior to the injury, after he'd kind of recovered from his off-season surgery, it was as efficient in terms of like, I don't know the percentages or whatever, but just in terms of his, like, the economy of his decision-making, his movements, his, like, everything was just so, it's as in control as I've ever seen him. I think I even said this when they played in my, against Miami that last game where he got hurt, but like, I think he's, you know, Randall, to be one of the best players in the NBA, you do have to have this, like, internal belief that you are one of the best players in the NBA. Like, you can't just be like, I'm a humble guy and I just happen to be talented. Like, no, you've got to, like, really believe, hey, I'm as good. Like, you can, you know, I thought the entire time Randall's been in New York, like, doesn't matter who he's on the floor with, like, he thinks he's on that level or better than those guys or whatever, right? And I think he's believed that, but I've always felt like doubt can creep into his mind. And that game against Miami, that was the first time I've really watched him play against Miami. And, like, he didn't even start that game that well. But at no point did it affect his decision-making. Did he get frenetic? And in my head, I was just kind of like, dude, this is, like, the first time I think I've watched him. And he doesn't think he's better than Jimmy Butler or Bam. He knows he's better than Jimmy Butler and Bam. And, like, honestly, the way he was playing at that time, I don't think it's like that crazy of a thing to think. He destroyed them in that game. He was awesome in that game. And I just think that, like, I don't know. I don't even know how the fuck I got here. The point being is, like, I think that happens because of the half court, you know, all that stuff. By the way, we should probably mention this. Jordan Bell poses OG Anunoby on the elbow. It just sore. Nothing really happened. Just went for a ball and it hurt randomly, but it's fine. Said the discomfort tonight was from rapid movement. Too much jacking off, I guess. You know, use the opposite hand, OG. Use your left hand, buddy. We've all been there. He said, from the rapid movement that you can't recreate in practice. Interesting. Yeah, look, I'm genuinely not too worried about this. I think that we have to do this. Chris Bernhardt brought this up. If people are going to react like this to OG, imagine how they're going to react when Randall comes back and starts to wince and grimace. Well, yeah, I'll let you react to this, but I did want to bring up what Jude Adventure said. Nah, Chris, a lot of Knicks fans have a different attitude when it comes to Randall. They would say he doesn't want to give the effort. He's lazy, blah, blah. That's me. That's what I would do. I've learned my lesson now. I will not question our fearless leader when he comes back. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think about that?
About Judah's comment?
No, about Chris's.
What is he implying there, though? Is he saying that people are going to freak out more? Like, I feel like people...
I think his point is, like, guys coming back from injuries are going to... They're going to, like... Your natural reaction when you... Like, when I've sprained my ankle before, right? So whatever, you don't play for a couple weeks. You come back. The first time you kind of get like kicked on your ankle, you're like, you might, the first time you tweak it, you might overreact. Like yeah. You might be like, oh my God. And you know, it genuinely could hurt more than it does, but it might not be a big deal. Like it might just be like the next day you might wake up and it's kind of like maybe a little bit sore, but you're not, you know, by the day after that, you might be fine. So like, I do think that people just need to understand OG coming back from this elbow, he needs to strengthen it. He needs to continue to strengthen it. I think he's even mentioned that before. You know, keep working on that. He's going to have stuff like this happens. And as long as it's not like, you know, a ligament issue, right? Which obviously that doesn't seem to be the case. And it wasn't the case. What he got surgery for wasn't a ligament issue. Like it's probably not that big of a deal. That's what I think he's getting at. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think that Randall just incites more divisiveness and more of the like extreme and volatile reactions in general. So I mostly just try to steer clear of those, even though, as you just referenced, I've obviously been involved in them too. You know, I try to steer clear of that stuff now. But I do agree with Chris's point that like, yes, if OG is... The thing is, though, is like everybody is universally behind the idea that OG is what he is right now. Like he is the least divisive player in the NBA, probably. He just showed up and the Knicks have basically been a championship level team whenever he's on the court or better. I don't know. So I feel like there's no Knicks fan right now who's like, are we sure he's that good? Whatever. I'm sure maybe there's like an RJ fan out there who wants to hate OG, wants the trade to fail because we traded RJ, but I'm sure that person exists.
That's a very fun way to be a Knicks fan.
Yeah. But for the most part, I think we're all behind OG Anunoby and his impact. So I think that's where a lot of the concern is coming from. This isn't to say that Knicks universe isn't behind Julius Randle or his impact. I just think, you know, Julius Randle's, it's his fourth year. I actually think it would be less frenetic, to be honest, if Randall came back and he was kind of like grimacing or pouting or whatever. I think it would just be like, all right, it's Randall. Like he'll be fine.
This is Larry Israel. Anyone who has had surgery can tell you that type of pain is normal. I've never had surgery, so
no.
Putting that out there.
Neither.
Yeah, Randall, on the other hand, hasn't had surgery, so it would be a lot more alarming. That's true. I just hope that, honestly, yeah, with Randall, I would just hope that I'm kind of hoping he comes. I feel like it's going to happen after the West Coast trip. That's when I think he'll be back. That's what I think anyway. We'll see. But I don't have any inside sources on that one. So you'll have to.
That was a good comment by Larry. I never would have understood that.
Yeah. Larry Israel, the loose bodies in OG's elbows were removed, or an elbow. I shouldn't say elbows. I don't want to freak anybody out. Just the one elbow. The loose bodies in OG's elbow were removed. It's not a ligament. There really isn't something to hurt. Right. Yeah. I mean, was my understanding. But again, I am not a doctor and I lose my brain. Like my brain cells are precious to me and I can't waste them on trying to understand medical terminology that will go in one ear and out the other. This is Jordan Bub post. This is from Chauncey Billups. We all had our hands full dealing with Jalen tonight. Put on a clinic as patients. He just manipulated the defense the whole night. He got everybody in foul trouble. put on a magical, masterful performance. Hey, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I did not feel that way, but like, look, again, he had 45 points. So who the fuck, like, who am I to say? Or like, what the right takeaway of Jalen Brunson's?
Dude, this quote just reminds me of like, man, that was one of the most absurd Mike Breen games I've ever heard. Like, that was so.
Did you like when he explained why Ayton got a technical? Yeah, he bounced the ball high. Like, yeah, all right, Mike.
So there was that. He was like, oh, that wasn't like an angry at the refs technical. That was it. But so there was that. And then there was he basically spent the whole game filleting Josh Hart, which was like, okay, at least it's deserved lately and tonight. But it seemed to go a little far tonight. You know, like he was loving him some Josh Hart tonight. But then
he makes winning plays. It's like he just, dude, like, you get like,
we get it.
It would be like the most, it would be like, look, I do think Josh Hart, I know that he only was a plus one tonight. I thought he was the best player on the floor tonight. He's awesome. But yeah. It was getting to like some crazy levels with him.
It was like getting uncomfortable. But then my favorite comment of the night was when he was like, oh man, it would be great to see a mind like Chauncey Billups get a full team. It's just like, dude, what the fuck?
Yeah, I do think Chauncey's, look, I will say, like, considering how many guys they had out tonight, they could have easily rolled over.
Yeah.
They played really hard. And like, did I think some of it was like, it's like the thing where as a fan, I'm like, stop pushing Jalen Brunson, guys. That's mean. But I'm sure Tibbs was probably sitting there like, I love how hard these guys are playing for Chauncey. This is fucking awesome. Like, he probably really respected that.
I've talked about this before. Before the 2014-2015 season, Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons, and Haralabob did like an hour or 2 hour video episode like previewing the season. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, yeah.
That is like, I've gone back and rewatched that like once or twice in the last 5 years. And what stands out to me is Lowe and Simmons trying to be like very political and like, you know, like not and try it because they're actual media guys. And Haralabob's just this gambler who doesn't give a shit and like will just say whatever he wants. And so there's this one part where they're talking about Monty Williams and Zach Lowe's like, you know, I like Monty Williams. He draws up some cool plays and like, yeah, he just seems like a good dude. And Haralabob's just like, Monty Williams the fucking worst. Like, he just drops that out of nowhere. And, oh man, I don't know why that just thought about that with Chauncey Billups. So I'm sure Chauncey Billups is a fine coach.
I think it's pretty amazing they have 19 wins this season, to be completely honest. Like, yeah. They have had brutal, and that was another thing where Breen kept talking about their injury issues this year. It's like, dude, relax. Like, you've said it like four times already. We get it. This is from Judah Bencher. What's sad is I felt the beginning of the game, Monica was sounding good, but got dragged down by Breen into talking about stupid shit. Like how special Matisse Thybulle is. Dude, that Matisse Thybulle thing, where he's like, this is one of the best defenders in the NBA. I was like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? Are we still doing the thing where we pretend that Matisse Thybulle is like some special game? Like, he's not OG Anunoby, dude. If you are one of the best defensive players in the league, I promise you, you're not going to be stuck in some fucking hellhole rebuilding team like Portland right now. Give me a break, dude. Like, enough. Like, it's just ridiculous. It was just, he was on some different level tonight. This is Larry again. When you have surgery, getting back full range of movement is a big thing. Sometimes you will extend it and it's eye opening, but in the end, it's a battle of regaining confidence. I like this comment. I want to read these two. Jordan Bud, this is a Jalen Brunson quote. Jalen Brunson, OG, and the elbow pain. I feel like if he's hurt, he wouldn't play. I think a lot of us have mindsets like that, but he went back out there. So that's telling. Yeah, they probably just put some Bengay on it. They're like, you're good, dude. Don't worry about it. JL, like, well, OG.
It's like Varsity Blues. you're good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So give him the shot. Just give him the shot. The whole fucking team's like, dude, he's dying. Like, what is wrong with you? JL, will OG ever have a negative plus minus in a game? Larry Israel, throughout the game, I was tense about OG's streak and his overall plus minus. The answer is no. OG will apparently never have a bad plus minus.
It actually just feels like it's impossible to lose the minutes when he's on the court. Like, that's how he makes it feel. It's ridiculous.
The minutes with him and Hart are basically like the greatest minutes of all time. It's really funny. I want to just mention this. I think, well, there's not much to say. Oh, here we go. Good quote. OG Anunoby, who aggravated his elbow tonight, said he will play Saturday in Sacramento. That's the plan. I wasn't thinking about not playing. So suck it, Jeff. Fuck you. I want to close with this, and I think this is an interesting conversation. Dante went 4 of 12 from the field, 2 of 8 from 3, 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. Should have fucking finished 5 of 12 for 14 points, but he wanted to smoke a fucking layup, asshole. But, like, are you worried at all about his recent overall dip in three-point shooting? I'm personally not. I just think, like, that's the nature of three-point shooting at volume, is you're going to have ups and downs. But I'm curious about what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, no, not at all. Regression was always coming. He's not the greatest shooter of all time. So I think I think he's pretty firmly, you know, in the 37 to 41% range. Sometimes that's going to be higher. Sometimes it's going to be lower. He's a really good shooter. I think we've seen no player is going to be what they are at their ceiling all the time. But I think some of his best moments have shown us what he's capable of. And what he's capable of is a really important player to this team, because he's almost entirely additive in the sense of his impact. He can move without the ball. He can shoot off of movement. He can defend multiple positions. He's a sneaky rebounder for a guard. He's a good cutter. Pretty much the only thing he's bad at is finishing, you know, within 10 feet, but that's okay, because he's also, I mean, that quote he had with Fred Katz, where he talked about his self-awareness and not feeling like he has to prove anything to anyone. He knows what he is. Humility like that is just so much of the battle, and not just in basketball, in life. Like, just knowing what you are, knowing what you can't do, having the humility and understanding to lean on other people for the things you can't do. That's what Dante DiVincenzo is representing in New York, and that's why we're seeing the best version of himself. So, you know, 10-game stretch where he shoots below 35%, that doesn't worry me at all, because I think he should have confidence every time the shot goes up. I think he does have confidence every time the shot goes up. And the truth of the matter is that when it's just Brunson as the pretty much the only initiator without Randall, his shot diet is harder. So, like, we forgot that. Like, his shooting in that 15 to 20 game stretch or whatever was crazy outlier levels of good. But that was before accounting for the situation. It was a subpar situation. He was making impossible threes over and over again.
Yeah.
That was just always going to come back down to earth. It doesn't worry me at all.
Yeah, and I think this comment from Chris Bernhard kind of ties into this. To be fair, we also need to be behind Julius, because he isn't good. We're not going anywhere near a title contender. Yeah, I mean, this is in many ways like a very big, you know, I think it's fair to say this. In some ways, it's a make or break season for Julius and Tibbs, as at least, you know, as far as I see it, in terms of like what is their future with this organization, with the Knicks as currently constructed. Because, and I know, like with Randall now with this shoulder thing, it's kind of thrown. There's a lot more nuance that needs to happen with that conversation. But like, we really need him to be good, not just to, you know, be like, all right, well, now we can feel better about committing to him moving forward long term, right? But also, like, because if we do think this team is a championship contender, and I do think they're a championship contender, or at least they have the ability to be a championship contender, they can't be that without him, though. And it can't just be like him out there. Like, he has to be a real difference maker. And the thing is, when he creates shots like for our three-point shooters, which Brunson just can't, and nobody else can, really. Like, he commands attention and collapses defenses in a way that nobody else on this team can replicate.
Especially with RJ gone. I mean, RJ was a lot of not-so-good things in New York. We all know that now. He's way better in Toronto. Good for him. Glad he is in a better situation.
Yeah, it's sometimes you have to leave to find the spot that's best for you. The Knicks are littered with these guys, right? So
RJ. I think you can make the argument that the one thing he consistently did do really well was force collapses. He didn't always make the best decisions after forcing those collapses.
Very kind.
But he does have a unique ability to get to the rim. And enough talking about RJ. But I do want to echo your thoughts and your just well wishes to RJ and his family. You know, once a Nick, always a Nick. That's just, maybe not everyone knows this. I lost a sibling within the last year. It's a really shitty thing to go through. It's pretty much something that changes your life forever. So I do feel a certain level of kinship or just extra sadness for RJ. And I'm just wishing him and his family the best, because that was just terrible to read.
Yeah. And, you know, like, he was a Nick for 4.5 years. So, you know, guys like that, you're always going to have some connection with as a fan, I think. And, you know, it's been not, I mean, obviously the actual news itself is not nice. It's terrible, but it has been nice to see like so many Knicks fans, you know, not like everybody should be sympathetic when something like that happens, but it has been nice to see that outpouring of support from Knicks fans for him, because like you mentioned, it's a really shitty thing to go through. And, you know, not that what we say is necessarily going to help him get through it, but I'm sure it's nice to see if he is seeing, or if anybody's seeing, you know, it's just nice to see in general that there is still that kind of like connection to the player from so many Knicks fans, and that we can kind of, I don't want to say have his back, but honestly, all of it was nice, right? Like fans, sure, but Tibbs pregame comments, Mike Breen talked about on the broad, his one shining moment on this broadcast actually was that.
Breen always handles those moments so well. He's like, I mean, we have some fun with Breen on this podcast. I truly believe he's one of the best in all of sports, and that's one of the things he does really well. Anytime there's something serious, he handles it with so much class. It feels like he always says the right thing. And yeah, this was just another example of that.
If Randall starts wincing and grimacing, nobody should be worried or making excuses for him, because it's his non-shooting arm. Never change, Omar. Chris Bernard, maybe his shot quality is catching up to his makes. This about Dante. Considering Dante has a tendency to just act like a skeet shooter and pull once he gets the ball. Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, they've needed him to be like that with Randall out. They've needed the variance. They've needed somebody to dial up the usage. Unfortunately, Alec Burks believes that he is the only person that should be dialing up their usage, which, by the way, thank you for listing my favorite Knicks stat of the year, which is that Alec Burks has the second highest usage on the team. Dude, since the trade.
That's so insane. What the fuck, man?
Alec Burks thinks it's Alec Burks time all the time. No, Breen does handle that stuff well. And, you know, by the way, actual last thing to close on, talking about really good play-by-play guys. I got to say, man, I watched that that fucking Bulls-Pacers game last night. Mm-hmm. Adam Mean, the fucking Bulls play-by-play guy, is fucking awesome. He was awesome in that game. He was going absolutely bonkers for like the last 2.5 quarters of the game. Just every shot, he was awesome.
Is he still stuck with
yes, Stacey King?
Yeah, oh man, that's tough.
Stacey King is like, I actually don't mind him, but like, he just gets into these sequences where you're like, dude, are you even saying words right now? Like, what is he'll just be like, DeMar, don't do it to him. I'm like, what are you talking about right now? He made like a fucking 10-foot jumper. Like, he does that like 70 times a game. Relax. No, I thought he was awesome in that call though yesterday, Adam Amin. So shout out to him, one of the best play-by-play guys in the league. Even if
there's I feel like the more I hop around League Pass, I've become impressed. Like, I still feel extremely lucky that the Knicks have Breen and Clyde. I think they're, of course, I have a bias, but I do think they're head and shoulders above pretty much the rest of the league, or actually just the rest of the league. But I am pleasantly surprised most of the time when I listen to other teams' booths, and I'm like, yeah, all right, they're doing fine.
The Hornets guy is the best. He's
awesome. Collins is awesome. I can't believe there are people who don't enjoy that. Like, he's in Charlotte calling his team. That's like, you know, speaking of Charlotte, how crazy is it that this is relevant to tonight's game? Like, remember how lambasted they were for taking Miller over Scoot? And now that's
been really good. Yeah, he's been really good.
That's wild. I can't believe that Miller is actually just like looking like mini Paul George, and Scoot Henderson has been just as brutal as he's been. Holy, tonight was just rough.
this is probably one of his better games, too.
I really liked, and we haven't talked about it tonight much, I really liked Monica McNutt's comment about his shooting form. I thought that was really good analysis from her. Like not all bad shooting from young players is created equal. Like you watch the Thompson twins, for example, and obviously they're an extreme negative, an outlier towards the negative. They have such a long way to go to even be like respectable, and they kind of have to find a shot to be anything more than what they are. But like Scoot's numbers are really bad, but then you watch him shoot and you're like, okay, I see a path to being like a league average 3-point shooter. It's not like he's just like, his form just isn't totally busted. And I thought that was that's an important discrepancy to realize. And I thought Monica that was a really astute observation by her. Well, I thought she did a really good job.
Definitely an astute observation. And definitely one that Clyde would have, he would have just been like, Mike, they say this kid Scoot can't shoot.
You would have been like, in front of his own bench, another foray in front of his own bench.
He loves the in front of his own bench one. That's one of his favorite things to comment on. This will be a good thing. I know that this is near and dear to your heart. From Omar, Tibbs really went to Brunson Deuce backcourt once again, even with Dante at the three. Yeah, great to see. And Deuce, look, he still has got to, like, especially that third quarter, fourth quarter stuff, like, he's got to have the fucking balls to, okay, we just had two bad possessions. I have to like do something now. It's up to me. I have to take kind of control of the situation. That doesn't mean you have to, you know, call your own shot or whatever, but you have to organize the offense. You have to get things situated. You have to get the team into the offense. That's what he has to build upon. But the first half, I thought it genuinely changed the game. I know it sounds a little ridiculous to say considering we're playing the fucking skeleton crew Blazers, but as soon as he came into the game, the defense tightened up. The Knicks they were able to string together stops. They got good shots on offense. That was a really, really impressive half for him. And to Omar's point, because of that, Tibbs extended his minutes to play along with Brunson. And it seems very clear at this point, Deuce is ahead of the pecking order for sure of Burks and also even Bogdanovich.
Yeah, and you called that like a month ago. We actually argued about it, and I was wrong, and you were right. To be fair to me, I didn't see a world where Burks would play this bad. Like I was like, I assumed he would make it at least kind of tough on Tibbs, and I didn't think he had to do much to make it tough on Tibbs because we know how much Tibbs loves Alec Burks. But holy shit, has he been bad? I mean, it's actually wild how like Grimes. I don't know if you know this, but Grimes is like 0 for his last 20 from three.
Yeah, he's been really fucking ass.
Is
Burks shooting worse from three or something? Is that what you're about to tell me?
No, but what I'm going to say is that Grimes being so wildly mediocre and just the short-term results looking as bad as they are have almost like masked how poor this trade should look for the Knicks. Like, because if Burks is out of the rotation in the playoffs, which it seems like he's on his way to being, and Tibbs clearly doesn't trust Boyan at all, like he, at least his defense, he clearly hates his defense. And like anytime you can just tell with Tibbs what he doesn't like. Like when he calls those quick timeouts, he only ever calls those quick timeouts when something he doesn't like is on the court. Like
the one in the fourth quarter today was awesome. I love that one.
Yeah, dude, 45 seconds of the fourth quarter. You know, he's just like scratching the back of his neck. Like, oh my God, these boy on minutes. Like, you know,
he was definitely just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
And you know, what's funny is I don't know if you noticed this, but like he calls the timeout. And then he looks at the end of the bench, and I was like, dude, is he bringing Brunson back in already? Like, he cannot be doing that. Thank God he didn't.
No, he was really pissed at Precious on that one because Precious just did not, like, he's supposed to wall up, and he just did not get back. And then if you notice, what he did do is he brought Hartenstein back in.
Yeah, like he brought Hartenstein in for Precious. Yeah, I did notice that. But if Boyan's defense is going to be such a hindrance – that Tibbs won't play him anywhere but backup small forward. Like, that's it. Like, we're not going to try it all to leverage the things he can do. And just like, yeah, you're just here to spell OG Anunoby for the 8 minutes I'm not going to play him. This is legitimately one of the worst trades ever if Quentin Grimes just can be a shell of himself. But Quentin Grimes can't be a shell of himself. So it's just like, yeah, I guess we all lost in this trade.
Yeah, you know? Everybody's a loser on this one. I do think I just can't believe Boyan will continue to shoot poorly. His track record as a shooter is too good.
I think I mean, XJ said the same thing on Hot Hand Theory. He was just like, give me all the Boyan stock, like, and maybe not in New York, but just like, he's too, he like, look at his shooting track record, and it's just too good. Like, he's just not, he just hasn't forgotten how to shoot. That's silly. The thing is, though, and I will say, more credit to Tibbs. I do think that Tibbs has differentiated between Burks and Boyan.
Because Boyan is, you can see him trying to like not be an asshole. He's like trying to adapt and play within whatever the Knicks are doing offensively.
But also, Schwinn, to me, it shows a recognition that you can help the team. Like, of course, we know Tibbs always says, oh, you can help the team without shooting well. But I don't mean it in the way Tibbs means it. When Tibbs says it, he means, like, you can play defense well, you can rebound well. What I'm saying is, like, you remember in Office Space when Peter's explaining to Jennifer Aniston about the tray at 7-Eleven? He's like, you take a penny from the tray. That's sort of what guys with good gravity do, is like every time down the court, they're just adding this little bit of impact that adds up over a long period of time. And I feel like even when Boyan is shooting this poorly, offensively, as long as he's not like punting the ball into the stands, his presence helps the team because defenses have to respect him as a shooter. And I feel like Tibbs differentiating between him and Burks is an understanding of what Boyan is capable of doing for an offense, even when the shots aren't falling. So I've appreciated that from Tibbs. I do think that Boyan should have a longer rope than Burks does.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, I think that's a good place to end it. We don't need to talk about this stupid game that nobody will ever remember, hopefully ever again. Jeff, let the people know where they can find you and plug anything that you'd like to plug.
I am Frank Barrett 11-9. Is that my number? Yeah, 11-9. I got it right. Good for me. I also run Hot Hand Theory, which is a new podcast created by me and XJ. We enjoy doing it. We actually had, I made a thread today about Josh Hart that did pretty well. Go and check it out. Yeah, that's what I got for you. Oh, and I'm writing the recap on this game. I don't know what else there is to say about this game, but I'm going to try and type something out. So I guess check that out too. I don't mean that to bury Strickland. I'm just like, we just talked about this game for an hour and 10 minutes. I can't believe there are people who still care about this game.
I agree. It's... Thanks to everybody that's in here, by the way. Appreciate everybody's support and you guys listening in. I'm nothing to plugs, but be on the lookout. Me and we got Pod Strickland coming out tomorrow. I believe there's a mailbag coming out as well. And I think there will be a Takes from Obvious Bozos that is coming out a couple days after that. Aside from that, check out the article that Matthew, if you're subscribed to the Patreon, check out the piece that he dropped today on all of the various opponents, or at least some of the various opponents the Knicks could face in the first round of the playoffs.
That's cool.
And also check out the piece that Zach dropped on the main site about all the graphic things that he likes and has not liked this season. I found that article particularly interesting. And I will be using it to make fun of Zach whenever I feel like making fun of him. So that's also an upside for me, a personal benefit for myself. Aside from that, check out Jeff's pod with XJ. They do really good work. The pod that the episode they dropped today was really fun. I enjoyed that conversation. Shout out to our sponsors, Ben Online and Cut. That's our show for today. Thanks again to everybody in the chat for rocking with us. Please hit like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. That'd be a huge help to us. I guess we will see you Saturday night, or somebody will see you Saturday night after the Kings game, where hopefully the Knicks can string together a third straight victory. That would be a very nice way and ease my agita about this West Coast trip. All right, everybody have a great rest of your night, and we will see you soon.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.